Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. On the rare Saturday edition of the Yard, I was going to record last night. I said, you know what, let's get through these Saturday games and kind of get a clearer picture of where things stand with the college baseball tournaments around the country. And we've done a lot of research. A lot has happened since we have been together. We're going to recap a little bit of the SEC tournament. We're going to look at how it's impacted the potential hosting sites. And it's so interesting. You know, a lot of people go to Hoover, you know, with different motivations. You know, Mississippi State really wasn't in a position to host. And, you know, it became a moot point with the, you know, the game one loss. But a lot has changed. You know, one of the things, kind of the subplots of the whole Hoover thing is what happens between the 16 and 14 teams, Alabama, Tennessee, and Ole Miss. Ole Miss entered the week with the weakest of those three teams' resumes. Well, now, here we are Saturday night, they have the strongest resume among those three teams. That's why you play. And it's so interesting. You know, a lot of people say, oh, no, not, Hoover doesn't matter. No, it matters. For teams that are playing for something, teams that are playing to be a potential top eight national seed or a host location, a team that's trying to play their way off the bubble, yeah, those games matter. But there are other teams, kind of like us, that don't have a lot to gain. And Hoover, you know, I mean, short of winning the SEC Tournament Championship, there's not a whole lot you can do to improve your standing. But we'll recap the days, and we'll kind of talk about what it all means. Got some football recruiting news we'll discuss today. And the next time we get together will be after the announcements have been made about regionals and all that kind of stuff. All that will happen on Monday. And, of course, on Sunday, there'll be a lot of tournament championships played around the country. Now, let me tell you this, and this is an educated opinion. Kind of what happens tomorrow is not going to have any bearing on the seedings on Monday. Okay, the hay, right now, the hay is pretty much in the barn. As the committee will go to bed tonight, they'll have kind of bracket A and bracket B, just in case there is like something crazy that happens on Sunday. But the thing about it is there's not a lot of teams left still playing that aren't good enough for an at-large, at least in the major conferences. So again, there's not going to be a lot of things that happen in the next 24 hours to truly impact Monday. What's happened Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Yes. Yes, there's some movement there. Absolutely. And that's what we're going to talk about today. For sure. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. We love Bulldog Burger Company because they're always there when we need them. Whether it's, you know, lunch with work colleagues, whether it's a night out with friends or family, maybe you need an adult beverage, maybe you just want to go by and have some dessert, right? But one of the main reasons you go are those great restaurant quality hamburgers. You know I'm right. You know I'm right. I kind of go through these phases where, you know, because I'm a guy that likes repetition. Some days it's the Pimentology ad bacon. Some days it's the mission with the pico on the side. Sometimes it's the Good Morning Burger. Go find your own favorites at Bulldog Burger Companies. Three great locations. University Drive here in Stark, Vegas. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo. Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's on the menu. It is. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Be sure and check them out today, whether you're in town or on the way to town. Stop by Bulldog Burger Company so they can assist you in your nourishment needs. Bulldog Burger Company, the place your people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's spend our first time together. You know what? Before we get into this, and that's the thing about having your own show. Wrote a story yesterday, found out that Mississippi State, of course, is kind of appealing to the National Football Foundation to get Mike Leach into the College Football Hall of Fame. They're not alone. A lot of people advocating on Mike Leach's behalf, and really for the betterment of football, right? Let's be honest about this. If the Hall of Fame doesn't have Mike Leach in it, is it a true Hall of Fame? You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't make any sense to me. A guy that's been one of the greatest innovators, one of the most colorful characters in the history of the sport. And he's missing it by one win. Some people say, you know what, they should credit him with the Outback Bowl win over Illinois. That's fair. As Chuck Dunlap from the SEC office says, you know, the problem here is COVID. If we'd had a regular year in COVID with 4 non-conference games and 8 SEC games, good chance he gets one of those non-conference games. Because, you know, one of them is always against an FCS opponent. So, yes, yes. And I think all of that is just kind of evidence that an exception should be made. And again, we're talking one win. And it's not like Mike Leach just coached for 10 years. Guy's been around the game a long time. I think everybody in all of college football would be okay with that. There may be a few Texas A&M Aggies that still have a an axe to grind, you know. But they're wrong. Mike Leach deserves to be in the hall. And a lot of people have reached out since I wrote that article, Steve, what can we do? Well, there's not a lot you can do, you know. But I think one of the things you can do is when you see these Mike Leach tweets and articles and things like that, you know, when you see people like former players of Mike Leach or other coaches advocating for Mike, retweet them. Share them on your Facebook. Keep the pressure on this foundation. Because, guys, it's not like it's federal law. And it's like, well, the rules are the rules. But, yeah, you made the rules. You can't make it an exception like this. Well, where do we, if we make one here, I mean, let's not be such sticklers about this. This is the right thing to do. Mike Leach deserves to be in the hall. And I think most of you feel like I do. I mean, that Hall of Fame is over in Atlanta. Next time that you have business over there in Atlanta, if Mike Leach is in the Hall of Fame, would you not go? Would you not go be a part of that? Of course you would. Of course you would. You would reward them for doing the right thing. And, you know, they shouldn't do it for any monetary reasons. They should do it because it's the right thing to do. Mike Leach deserves to be in the College Football Hall of Fame. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. All right, let's get back to baseball here. So when we last spoke, obviously, you know, it was after, you know, our game on Wednesday, you know, hustled home and it's disappointing, you know. We talked about that three-way tie, right, with Ole Miss, Alabama, and Tennessee. We said, you know, that Alabama-Tennessee game is kind of a play-in game, you know. So Tennessee gets the better of that. So I think that really removes Alabama, you know, that moment kind of removed them from the hosting discussion for me. They were just kind of narrowly hanging on by a thread, and they've done nothing to help themselves this week. And you'd say, but Steve, it shouldn't matter about the week. Well, it does in some respects. Now, you can't just be a bad team all year and then go make it to the semifinals of your league tournament and say, hey, well, we deserve to be in the – you know, in a hosting discussion. That's just not how it works. But yeah, Alabama's done really nothing to help themselves. Tennessee gets a win against a team that they were kind of competing against. Oklahoma, surprising win over Georgia. And again, the Georgia offense simply doesn't travel. But here's the thing. The fact that they're positioned where they are, they're not going to have to travel again unless they go to Omaha. Yeah, that's a big part of this thing. Kyson Witherspoon, it's elite, man. I tell you, when we got ready to play Oklahoma, I had somebody in pro baseball tell me that there may be may not be another player, if I can get it out, in college baseball that had changed the trajectory of their career more than Kyson Witherspoon. This is a guy that was kind of considered, you know, kind of a moderate weekend guy, and then he becomes one of the elite guys in all of college baseball this year and kind of finished the tournament with a 10-3 record, 7 2/3 in that last ball game, 8 strikeouts. Just ridiculous numbers. And, yeah, he shuts down Georgia. True story. Ole Miss, we felt like that Ole Miss-Florida game was kind of a play-in game, too. That, hey, you know, a lot of people were saying, hey, Florida may be able to host. And my thing of thinking about that is this whole thing with Florida and Ole Miss, if you go resume to resume, right, Ole Miss finished higher in the league, and Ole Miss beat Florida 2 out of 3. Now, Florida's a much different team than they were back then. However, they've been red hot here as of late, and then Ole Miss limits them to one run on 4 hits. So that's a big statement for Ole Miss, because there were a lot of people that were saying Florida actually has the better resume and they've got more momentum down the stretch, which was true. And Ole Miss is like, you know what, we can take care of it. And they did. So that eliminates Florida. And so I think, again, that's, again, one less hosting suitor to consider. Texas A&M stayed hot. You know, Auburn goes to Hoover outside of the top eight in most people's thinking, needing to make some things happen. And then Texas A&M beats them. Justin Lampkin, better performance for him. It's been a tough year, of course, without Morris Hodges behind the plate to give you ball and a half off the inside corner right-hand play hitters. It's kind of tough sledding in the SEC. But Lampkin ends the year 5-7. But A&M, big win there, 3-2 win. Caden Kent, I think Caden Kent's a guy, obviously, pro pedigree with that guy. That guy has been really good for them in a really bad year. And he had a three-run bomb in that game that proved to be the difference. You know, A&M gets up 3-0, and really Auburn pitched it well the rest of the day. Just couldn't piece anything together offensively. And so the Aggies win 3-2. Tennessee and Texas, again, Tennessee knocks off Alabama. Loud win over the number one seed, Texas, 7-5. Very entertaining game, as you guys are well aware. It goes 12 innings. The Vols get two in the 12th there. Nate Snead with the win there in relief. I really enjoyed the ball game, and I thought, you know what, after this, Tennessee's probably in a great position to host. Oklahoma couldn't finish the deal against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt quietly, and much to my dismay in some respects, Vanderbilt's put together a really good year. And I said at the beginning of the year, these guys are not for real. And they don't have a lot of offense. But when you've got the pitching that they have, especially with J.D. Thompson, you look at his record and say, well, he's 5-5. The guy has kept them in every game and did a great job against Oklahoma. That Oklahoma offense, not necessarily elite, but they got a few kids on there that can really swing it. The bigger ballpark helps, as you guys know. But Vandy wins that game 6-1, knocks out Oklahoma. And it'll be interesting to see, and I think if we're fair about it, Oklahoma probably deserves to be seated a little bit ahead of us. Number one, they beat us 2 out of 3. Even though we finished the regular season ahead of them, they last longer than Hoover. So you can make a case for that. All right, we get into Friday's games. And Ole Miss takes down Arkansas, the number two seed. And it's interesting, too, to see all of these, not all of them, but most of these upper seeds, the teams that had the double bye, have not played well. And that's one of the things you got to consider. And there's a lot of people around the league kind of critical of the single elimination format. I kind of like it, to be honest with you. And here's another thing, too. When you go before the committee, you never have to hear about, well, they went 0-2 in their league tournament. Right? I think the current format is okay. I think attendance has been good. I think we've seen some really good games. But Ole Miss with a 5 spot there in the first. And then Arkansas answers with 1. And they had that horrific collision out in at right center with Harrison and Mormon. And when I first saw it, I thought, oh, holy smokes, neither one of those guys are going to be able to continue. Well, it turns out one does, one doesn't. But, man, you hope those guys are getting – now, you know, they still got something to play for. But you don't want to see any young person get hurt. And that's just one of those wild and crazy plays. Two guys going wide open trying to make a play for their team. And everybody's like, call it. You know, sometimes in those emotional moments, you know, when you kind of zone out, you block out the crowd and everything, sometimes you don't hear them. But Riley Maddox pitches well for them. And, again, 5-2 win for the Rebels. And so there were so many people that thought, well, you know, including me, Ole Miss didn't have a great hosting resume. They were certainly in the tournament. They did not have enough to host before Hoover. I think it's pretty safe to say, yeah, now they do. And I think that's a pretty loud win over an Arkansas team that some people think is one of the favorites to win the national championship. That's a big, big win. Texas A&M at LSU, interesting ball game. LSU gets up 2-0, and you think they're going to run away with it. And then they get up 4-0, and it's like it's just crazy. Like LSU, they weren't charged with any errors, but they had some really bad baseball defensively. A&M gets 2 in the 4th, And what can you say about Jace LaViolette? Of course, he has the fractured bone in his hand and still DHs. And says a lot about his teammates and his love for his university. End of the road for the Aggies. LSU wins 4-3. Just enough pitching to kind of get it all figured out. Of course, they threw Cade Anderson and then came back with Ianson. And I love what Jay Johnson said after the game. He goes, now next weekend we can do whatever we want to do. Right? We kind of lightened the load on both of these guys. And whoever we need to throw in game one, we can. Everybody will be – the both of those guys will be on the – you know, basically the same throwing program this week. So I get it. You want to win the game, and you felt like today maybe you'd get enough pitching. I thought LSU had enough pitching to win today. Just didn't have any offense. And give Ole Miss a lot of credit. But in the early game, it's Vandy all over Tennessee. And that's the thing you begin to ask yourself. Did Tennessee do enough to host? I think if you're looking at this thing between Tennessee and Ole Miss, and listen, you can argue, yes, Tennessee went on the road and beat Ole Miss in Oxford. However, Ole Miss is still playing. Ole Miss will play for a title tomorrow as Vanderbilt mercy rules Tennessee 10-0. That's not a great way to close it out. Right? It's really not. That's the last impression that you have to make on the committee. And when you've already dropped five of the last six series, I think it's one of those things you look at and you begin to think, you know what? This team, do they have enough success when Liam Dole is not on the mound? I think they're pretty average the rest of the time. And then, you know, what are they going to be like away from Lindsey Nelson? Well, we saw this week they could play a little baseball without the home run, but they're still not the same team, and most people aren't. But, again, Ole Miss comes into Hoover with the most to prove among those teams, and what do? They take down LSU 2-0, one in the first, one in the fourth, and then put together 9-0s. Will Furness with a solo shot early in the ballgame. Gunnar Dennis gets the win there in relief, but very, very interesting dynamic. And this is one of the things that we'll talk about now. We'll talk about how we do our top 10 list. But what does this mean for LSU's potential top 8? Did you think beginning the week that that would be a concern? I think not. And I think they're still right there on the border of that. But now I think you could make a case that maybe they're the 9-10. And again, we'll get into some of that in the next segment of the show. But, you know, it's just so interesting to me when I think about so many teams having so much to play for in these conference tournaments. And some of the teams that we felt like were probably in the best position. Ole Miss is kind of coming here and upset the apple cart. Yeah, true story. And we'll get to more of that here shortly. And, you know, Southern Miss still absolutely red hot, too. You know, Southern Miss gets a win over Troy. They'll play Coastal in the final. But a lot to think about. And I ran a story yesterday kind of about how the College Baseball West was woven. And the thing that I worried about before I wrote the article, and I don't worry as much. It's still a concern. I worried, were there going to be enough teams west of the Mississippi to fill those western brackets, especially the ones out in California? And now that we've had some of these tournaments go final, and we've had some of these tournaments see some teams eliminated, I'll give you a good example, like the Ohio Valley, right? That's an Eastern tournament. But Arkansas Little Rock, coached by former Diamond Dog catcher Chris Curry, wins the tournament. Well, of course, they're west of the Mississippi, so they'll probably put them in Fayetteville. But then whoever was expected to be in Fayetteville now will push farther west. Does that make sense? So the more teams that we have west of the Mississippi make the field, the better chance we have of staying somewhere in the southeast, which makes it a lot more drivable. And that's, listen, last week that was all the talk. And even early this week when I got to Hoover, it's like, yeah, probably going to be a couple teams in the SEC go west. Well, some people are still forecasting Kentucky to make it. I think it's going to be tough. I know D1 baseball still has them in. I think it's going to be tough to get Kentucky in. And I think actually some of this chaos within the league kind of works against them. But if Kentucky gets in, I think they're going west. I think Oklahoma may have surpassed us to a situation. I think I really thought before it'd be us in Oklahoma or Oklahoma and Kentucky. It'll be interesting to see how we're viewed. Now, of course, geography matters. And so you have two teams that are similarly situated, much like Oklahoma and Mississippi State. You say, well, it's an easier travel path for Oklahoma to get west. It's an easier travel path for Mississippi State to stay in the southeast. It wouldn't make a lot of sense to send them east and then send us west when they're far more western than we are. And so I still think if Kentucky makes it, I think Oklahoma and Kentucky are probably your best bets to go west. But we'll get into more of that a little bit later. I don't want to get ahead of myself here. Let's go ahead and give a shout-out to closewithblair.com. No games to play, no players to reward. But you can reward yourself with the dream of home ownership. Many of you have been denied that opportunity in the past. And some of it may be because you just weren't ready. Maybe you weren't in a position that you were ready to buy a house. Maybe mentally you were, but maybe financially you weren't. Maybe credit-wise you weren't. If you're in that position now, let me encourage you to sit down with Blair, call him, text him, email him, and let him look at your case and see, put you on a path to recovery and say, okay, this is what we need to do to get you eligible to buy a home. And there's not a lot of other people going to do that. They're just going to take your information and say, oh, we can't do anything with it. But Blair's a guy that's been doing this 24 years. And he can say, you know what? Hey, I'm going to need business next year too. And maybe we need to put you on a pathway like a 12-month recovery program. And so, okay, here's what we need to do. You know, we need to get this credit score boost up. Maybe we need to pay off some debt. You know, there's a lot of things that go into this thing. And Blair is a mortgage professional. There are a lot of people out there that are in the mortgage industry. He is a mortgage professional. Phone number 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Get that pre-qualification letter. That's a life hack they don't tell you about. I've been through this a few times. I bought a few homes, and I can tell you, knowing exactly what you're shopping for makes a big difference, right? It truly does. Make sure that you know what you're doing. Don't shop with your eyes. Shop with your checkbook. It's important to not try to live above your means. And I get it. You think, just get me in a house and I'll figure it out. Then you got to work overtime hours so you never can enjoy it, just so you can pay for it all. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look no further than Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. All right, real quickly, and we'll go over a couple things, and then we'll get into the top 10 list, and then we'll kind of break down some more things here. But I want to talk specifically right now about, you know, the SEC RPI, kind of where it sits right now. I felt like going into the week that Texas had a real chance to be the overall number one seed in the tournament. I still think that's a possibility. Now, I understand what the RPI says. Right now, Vanderbilt, number one in the RPI, two in the strength of schedule, and they have 40-plus wins. That 40-win plateau is something that always tends to matter, right? And it's just human nature. When a team has won 40-plus games, especially in a power league, you consider that team to be worthy of some very impressive accolades, and that's the case. I don't think Vandy is the top team in the tournament. And again, the metrics kind of suggest that maybe they should be. They're definitely going to be a top eight. But when you compare Texas and Vandy head-to-head, it would be easy for me to say, you know what? I think Vandy is the better team. Even though Vandy has four more losses, Texas has some games that didn't get played. Texas 42-12 with a strength of schedule of 18. RPI of 4. Vandy, strength of schedule of 2, 41 wins, number one in the RPI. That's an interesting thing to me. What will they do with the top overall seed? Texas won the regular season championship in the RPI's number one league, and they won it by a couple games. It wasn't a scenario where Texas just kind of leaked in. They didn't back into the title. I think that will still matter in the eyes of the committee, even though the RPI has kind of been juggled a little bit, because it's not all just RPI generated. But one of the things that I think works against Texas as the number one overall seed is a non-conference strength of schedule of 205. You know, you talk about people like, oh, well, you know, Steve, our non-conference wasn't great. Yeah. Texas is worse than us. Not by much, but they were. This is kind of how life works. You look now at Georgia, number two in the RPI, six in the SOS, 42 wins, easily a top eight. And then you get to this anomaly, kind of this glitch in the matrix. Auburn, three in the RPI, but less than 40 wins. 38 wins. Yes, they have the number one SOS, and they also go 0-1 in Hoover. So they didn't do anything. When the chips were down, and Auburn had a chance to kind of, that's the thing, you go back and look that last weekend at Oxford, right? I really thought Auburn would go up there and take two of three. Well, you lose that series, and then you come to Hoover, you don't help yourself. Again, I think Auburn is a solid host, but not going to be a top eight. I know some other people are projecting it. I just don't think it's going to work out that way. I shared with you guys late last week, I was hearing that we would get at least four, at most five. Well, you start running this thing down now, and you think, okay, Vanderbilt, yes. Georgia, yes. Texas, yes. Arkansas, yes. All right, well, there's your four. With LSU dropping out of the top 10 in the RPI, and I think they were probably a pretty fragile top eight anyway, losing today, they're down to 12 in the RPI. Non-conference strength of schedule, 222. Brutal, man. That's the highest of anybody in the top 20 with the RPI. That's LSU, the worst non-conference among many of the Power Four contemporaries. I think there is a real possibility LSU is not a top eight national seed. And I didn't know how bad it was going to look in the RPI with them losing. I expected them to win today against Ole Miss, and I didn't think it would matter. And some people are saying, hey, has Ole Miss done enough to be a top eight national seed? No, they have not. Okay, and again, they're now, I think, very solid in the hosting. I think it's a foregone conclusion now that Ole Miss will host and should host. I don't think they're a top eight. And part of that is going to be because of the fact that I think now this is going to give the committee a little more leeway to work with. With the SEC teams kind of beating each other up, you know, only the strong survive. And I think Ole Miss has done more than enough to maybe move up to maybe 13-14 in the hosting. And I think LSU has hurt themselves. And even though Ole Miss has beaten LSU head-to-head, I think when you go back and look at, you know, the totality of the season and not just today's result, I won't be surprised to see LSU ahead of Ole Miss when it's all said and done. Maybe like 10. But it's interesting. You start running this thing back. Vanderbilt, Georgia, Texas, Arkansas, Oregon State. There's some people out there that are also kind of working against all this with Oregon State. You know, and saying, hey, they shouldn't be a top eight. They didn't have a conference. They didn't make an excuse for themselves. They'll certainly host, but there are some anti-Oregon State top eight advocates out there. And so, again, you go back and think, okay, Clemson, North Carolina, yeah, you feel great about that. Coastal, yeah. I think when it's all said and done, when you look at the RPI, I think that's where it's going to go. I think Oregon State will be a huge part of that discussion. But when you think about, you know, that grow the game contingent that it won't Coastal in there. And listen, they're 26-4 in your league. And the Sun Belt's not a bad baseball league. I mean, it's competitive. You only have three teams with a sub-100 RPI, but it's a competitive league. And so you begin to run that back. So I think you pull Auburn out, and that's one of the questions that I ask myself. With LSU dipping a little bit and Auburn sweeping LSU, does this give Auburn just enough of an argument to get back in as an eight? That's the real question, I think. With LSU dropping back, and again, look at them resume to resume. LSU won five more games than Auburn. And that's going to be a tough hill to overcome if you're the Auburn Tigers. But you're three in the RPI, LSU is 12. You have a strength of schedule of 1. They have a strength of schedule of 36. Your non-con, if you're Auburn, is 53, which is very respectable. As we mentioned, LSU, 222. And so resume to resume, I think you could make a case either way. But I won't be surprised if Auburn ends up getting that last top eight, because when you start thinking about, you know, comparing Ole Miss to Auburn, the resumes are pretty similar. They really are. It's just, has Ole Miss, they jumped 8 points in the RPI just today. And some people are saying, have they done enough? I don't think so, but it is worthy of conversation. All right, time for today's top 10 list is always brought to you by Kalido Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O guitars.com. Very easy to remember that. Kalido Guitars, a Mississippi state-owned and operated company out of Lake Jackson, Texas. Owner and operator still has family here in Starkville. Get back from time to time, watch a few ball games, visit with the fam, take in some of the great sights and sounds of Starkville. And listen, I believe in keeping business in the family whenever we can. I do. I think it's very important that we support each other. So if you have a guitar player in your family, or perhaps you are a guitar player, let me encourage you to peruse the fine selections at KalidoGuitars.com, and they'll give you some incentive to do so. Whether you're looking for an electric guitar, a classical guitar, an acoustic guitar, a beginner guitar, a professional guitar, anything guitar related you can find there. Gig bags, guitar cases, strings, the whole ball of wax at Kalido Guitars. Be sure and check them out. You know, it's summertime. Maybe a good time that you turn your kid onto the opportunity to play some guitar. It's very, you know, it's stress reducing. Even if you can't play well, there's just something about plugging in and just hammering out a few power chords to make you feel good about life. You owe it to yourself to experience that. It's true. You don't have to be a great player to enjoy playing. I speak from experience. All that understood. Kalido Guitars will give you a promo code. Well, I'm going to give it to you now. It's BSR. You know it. We just wanted to make it simple. Promo code BSR, whether you order online, in person, or over the phone, BSR unlocks some incredible savings for you. 10% off your purchase price, free shipping, no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas, and a 5% donation of your purchase price will be submitted to the Bulldog Excellence Fund. How incredible is that? Great instruments and gear at a discount, and Mississippi State benefits from your purchase. I wish more businesses did this. It's a great way for you to be involved and get a great instrument at a great price and help Mississippi State in the process. Be sure and check it out today, Kalido Guitars. Okay, we're going to do some rock stuff today. I'll be honest with you. I listen, the Treaty Oak Revival thing, that's Roy's thing. And he goes, he's not a jam band guy, but Roy is kind of eclectic. I will say, you know, we had tickets to go see Queensryche together, and I was unable to make it, unfortunately. And I love Queensryche. If you know me, you know that I love Queensryche. But Roy went and had a good time without me. And I appreciate Roy's friendship. But, you know, I like guitars that plug in. I do. And I like a little industrial sound and things like that. But one of my favorite bands of all time is Aerosmith. And I believe that Aerosmith is America's greatest rock band. You could make a case for the Eagles, and that's really the only other option that I'm willing to consider. Aerosmith or the Eagles. I think if we really get down to it and remove personal bias from it, that's probably the top two rock bands of all time from the United States. Now, there's been some bands from the 80s that made a good run. Don't get me wrong. But the longevity that those two bands have had have been incredible. A lot of not a lot of new music from them in recent years. But, I mean, goodness, they started in the late 60s, early 70s. Give them a break. Right? They can't play forever. But Steven Tyler has been on some guest spots that I think are rather interesting. And I thought maybe we'd talk about that today. Steven Tyler, I mean, kind of the voice of a generation, really not in the range of advocates, you know? He's just a guy that's just kind of sung rock and roll. And I think about, like, how many times I've heard the song Dream On in my lifetime. And I go back and think about ESPN when they had the you know, the millennial thing, you know, they went at the end of the 90s, they had the greatest sports moments of the 1900s, and they used Dream On. And you can find that video online, and it gets to me every time, that big note that Steven Tyler hits down the stretch. And it's such a great song, too. I mean, if you ever go back and just forget about the majesty of sports, but you go back and look at the lyrics of that song. I mean, it's one of those things that empowers people, too, especially at, you know, in older ages. And we talk about all these lines in my face getting clearer every time that I look in the mirror. All these lines in my face getting clearer. I mean, that's about getting older. And one of the things, I think when we stop dreaming, we start dying. I think it's always important to have something to look forward to. And again, Steven Tyler's in a bunch of guest spots. So, and it's very kind of eclectic, kind of like Roy, kind of all over the place. And I think some of these may surprise you, but I think you'll have some fun with this list. We're going to go number 10. He actually did two tracks with Chris Botti. I didn't know a lot about him. It's Botti, Chris Botti. Of the two tracks that I heard, I prefer the track Smile. I think it's great. It may even be a cover. But I think Steven does a really good job, and it's different than what you're used to. The number 9 is so fun. Okay, I'm a Bob Marley guy. I love real reggae. I like even some of the California reggae, too. I like some of that. But I got to be in the mood for it. And so, you know, they did, like, you know, some Bob Marley stuff. They kind of got some old stuff, kind of did some duets through the process of technology. And they did one with Bob and Steven, Roots Rock Reggae. Super cool thing, man, to hear those two legendary performers on the same track, even though it wasn't recorded at the same time. All right, number 8, Russ Irwin. Now, this is a little different, too. You know, this, again, you know, we've done kind of, you know, classic type stuff with an orchestra, and we've done reggae. Russ Irwin, a little bit different, but I miss being lonely. And it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek song about relationships. You know, things aren't going great. I kind of miss being lonely, you know. I don't miss being lonely because I'm by myself most of the time. I'm rarely ever lonely, but I'm alone a lot. And there is a difference in that. When you work as much as I do, being alone is often a good thing. Right? No distractions. Be nice sometimes to bounce some things off people, but the reality of it is there is a difference between being alone and being lonely. In my younger years, I mistook the two and was kind of a serial dater. You know what I mean? Like, I just couldn't stand to be by myself. And now, even though I've been married all these years, I do enjoy having some time to myself. And that's nothing against her, but when it's a work day, and it always is for me, I like having some time to myself to kind of work at my own pace. Maybe you've discovered that. But I miss being lonely. Again, kind of an interesting song. Now, big Santana guy. And I love the fact that Clive Davis kind of rediscovered Santana and reintroduced the magic of Santana to new generations. You remember what a great album that was. Like when Smooth came out with Rob Thomas and Matchbox 20, people were like, holy smoke, Santana? Are you kidding me? And then young people were like, well, who's this guy? And then you had The Game of Love with Michelle Branch. It was so great. And so Santana, of course, a lot of guest vocalists in their stuff. And Steven Tyler was one of them. Your number 7 track is Just Feel Better, Santana featuring Steven Tyler. That's a really, really fun song. Now, number 6, it's a country track, and you probably didn't expect that Steven Tyler had contributed to some country stuff. But he did, and it's an artist that I didn't know. But it's Keith Anderson's 3-chord country and American rock and roll. And Steven Tyler is a part of that. Some of you guys may know him. Maybe you love Keith Anderson. He is a new one to me. But I do think it is an interesting track and worthy of your listenership. Number 5, one of my favorites on this list. I like Pink. I do. And it's kind of ironic. You know, one of the best songs on the Nine Lives album, of course, from Aerosmith is Pink. It's my favorite color, you know. And, of course, it's very tongue-in-cheek. But he and Richie Sambora collaborated with Pink on a super cool song, kind of a blues track. Richie played the solo, did a little backing vocals, and then Pink and Steven Tyler crafted this cool song called Misery. Really, really interesting song. And, you know, Pink is kind of a top 40 artist, but she does branch out a little bit. Got a big voice, too. Number 4, speaking of the blues, you got to sneak this one in here, man. It's a collaboration with Buddy Guy. And interesting song, Evil Twin. I think you'll have a lot of fun with this one, too, especially if you like the blues. And that's the thing about this list that I think is so interesting. It's not just the people that he's worked with. It's the different genres he's been willing to kind of lend his talent to. And at the end of the day, Aerosmith's a blues band. I mean, honestly, that's truly at their core, they are a blues band. You go back to that first album, you know, One Way Street and things like that, Steven kind of honking on that harmonica, incredible. They are a blues band, and rock and roll at its core is a product of the blues. I think most people know that. Number three, and it's interesting because Aerosmith has covered so many Beatles songs over the years. You know, Come Together, it's one of them, you know. There's a lot of them that they've done, some live, maybe not in the studio. But he collaborated with Julian Lennon, John Lennon's son. How about that? And did a track called Someday. And it's more adult contemporary, right? I think you'll enjoy that one because it's, you know, to me, it's just one of those timeless type moments that, you know, Steven Tyler was a fan of the Beatles. And then have those two work together and collaborate, I think it's pretty special. Number two, and this actually was on a number one record. Dolly Parton released an album called Rockstar, and she did all these rock songs, you know, with Nikki Sixx and Steven Tyler and all these other great legendary rock artists. And I remember Nikki Sixx sharing the message from Dolly Parton when she texted him and said, well, Nikki, it looks like we got a number one record. And she did. And if you've not listened to that, you owe it to yourself, because everybody loves Queen Dolly, right? But to hear her work with some rock stuff, and she said she'd always wanted to do a rock album. And I love the fact that somebody, even on the tail end of their career, is willing to experiment a little bit. I think it's great. And it's a great, great song. Dolly Parton and Steven Tyler worked together on I Want You Back. It's great. I think you're going to really enjoy that one. And if you are one of these people that has been maybe true country your whole life, and I get that. There's some people that's like, hey, this kind of speaks to me. I think you owe it to yourself to listen to that Dolly Parton Rockstar album. I really do. I think it's going to open your eyes a little bit and maybe show some different colors in the palette that Dolly Parton's working with. And to think that all these years later, we're still learning new things about Dolly Parton, I think that's one of the things that's made her so timeless. Right? I mean, she acted for a while. She was involved with TV for a while. I mean, she has done so many things. It's kind of been a Forrest Gump life for Dolly Parton. And I think I go back to the old Porter Wagoner days. I remember being a kid watching her like on Hee Haw and the Grand Ole Opry and things like that. And then here she is in 2025 still doing new things. And how great would it be to be at that point in your career, which you could do whatever you wanted to and people would love it, right? But number one, this is just my favorite song. I'm not going to sit here and say this is the one that you'll like the most. It's the one that I like the most. And it's Orianti's Sex E Bizarre. She sings part of it. Steven sings part of it. It's very much a rock song. And of course, you know, she has just about done a guest spot with everybody at some point. But this was on her own solo album, and I think you'll have some fun with that. And again, anytime that you hear Steven Tyler get out there and scat and kind of put the Aerosmith color on a track, to me, it just adds a lot of value to it. And again, my feeling, Aerosmith, the greatest American rock band of all time, and you owe it to yourself, you young bucks, to go back and listen to the Columbia Records stuff like before. You know, really before your lifetime, before the comeback, before Done With Mirrors. And Done With Mirrors may be the weakest album. And Honkin' On Bobo was just okay, too. But, you know, you go back, you know, to Get Your Wings and Rocks and those kinds of things, you know, Draw the Line. I mean, there's so much that you've heard today in rock music that dates back to them. Like, Aerosmith is kind of the foundation on which so much rock and roll is built. And in many respects, I think Aerosmith, Rolling Stones, those bands, and I could talk about the Stones forever too, but I was kind of late to the party on the Stones, to be honest with you. But I have loved Aerosmith much of my life. And again, I've told you guys before, my Uncle Warren was a guitar player and played in a band called Phoenix, and they did a lot of local support down in South Mississippi, and he was a big Aerosmith guy, so in turn I was. You know, he loved the Doobie Brothers and Bob Seger and people like that. And one of the saddest things that I can share with you, and I don't know why I feel the need to share this with you, but yeah, my Uncle Warren eventually became a minister, was in the Salvation Army for a while, and continued to play his guitar, and eventually had a stroke and lost the use of his pick hand. And it is one of the saddest things in my life to know that was taken from him, right? And it's a reminder, too. You know, people tell you when you're young, appreciate your health. You know, take care of yourself. Because like once you lose your health, you lose so many of the things you love. That was the case for him. And while he is still very much a happy-go-lucky guy, I know there's a part of him, there's a piece of his life that is missing because he can no longer play the guitar. And so I share that with you, perhaps as a reminder that let's not take these things for granted that we love. I mean, not just the people, but the things that we enjoy getting out and doing. And there's going to come a time in our lives that we're not going to be able to do it. And we don't want to look back one day and say, I wish I'd have done this, wish I'd have done that, right? They say the most expensive thing in life is a life of regret. And so I encourage you to do some things for yourself, not just be the guy or the gal that pays for everything so everybody else can have a great life. All right, that's your top 10 list for today. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanthi, the keeper of the list, on X at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. And of course, you can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. And one of the reasons we love Campus Bookmart is because they have what we want. And what do we want? More Mississippi State merch, right? Look no further than a Starkville institution like Campus Bookmart. Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job outfitting that store with the latest in Mississippi State wares, whether they be apparel items, gift ideas, everything you need to detail out your fan cave can be found at Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. I tend to get that complimentary hug when I go, maybe that's just me, but I think it's just that exemplary level of service. You know, these are bulldogs too. These are not just hired hands. These are people that ride the wave just like you do. Be sure and check them out when you're in town. If you can't make it to town and would love to support a Starkville business, and we always love that, visit them online at campusbookmart.net. And by doing so, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, incomplete. Okay. Again, I've been worried a little bit about us getting shipped out west. I know D1 baseball keeps saying Florida State. I would be okay with that because it's drivable for all of you. I wonder a little bit about our fan support if we went out west. I know there would be many of you there. We got a lot of great Bulldogs about in California. They would make it a point to be there. I'm going to go wherever it is. I just want to win a regional, right? Florida State got a couple of big-time starters, but, you know, we face big-time starters all the time in the Southeastern Conference, so I don't really worry about that aspect of it. But I think this Florida State thing is kind of dipping a little bit. You know, it's just one of those things you look at and say, you know what, they're not going to be a top eight. And that was one thing, again, kind of starting the week, when you think about guys on the committee. J.R. Teagues, AD at Southeastern Louisiana, his team trying to get an at-large bid. I don't think it's going to happen. It would probably be one of those situations where, you know, people would be really upset if they did. But one of the things that I've learned is basically, if you're not in the top 75, they're not even going to review your case unless you're a tournament champion. Then you get the automatic qualifier. But, you know, Southeastern's one of those teams that has done a good job. They have moved up in the RPI. They were running around 70. Now they're at 53. So even a lot of these people on the committee, you know, have a personal agenda. And that's not necessary to, you know, cast aspersions to those people. You want baseball people on the committee. They have teams too, right? And there's, you know, they always talk about comparison is the enemy of joy. Well, it's their job to do the comparison. But Southeastern up to 53 in the RPI, and I think that's probably enough cover to get them in somewhere. And we need as many teams west of the Mississippi to make the tournament to fill those brackets on the west side, just because of the fact we'd like to stay more in the south. You know, again, at the end of the day, I just want to win. Now, many of you are wondering about Virginia and about Brian O'Connor. Well, they have dropped to 62 in the RPI. It's going to be very difficult for them to make the tournament. They were 32 and 18. They were eliminated from the ACC tournament. They have a non-conference SOS of 243, which is not great by any stretch of the imagination. But beginning of the week, there was a possibility of them making it. They've dropped seven spots in the RPI. It will be interesting to see what the final projections look like as they relate to Virginia. We talked about Iowa earlier in the week, you know, as they were a team, too, that was going to be difficult to get them in because they were, you know, even though they had led the Big Ten much of the year, they kind of stumbled down the stretch. Well, right now, they're 78 in the RPI. They have dipped out of the 75. So it appears right now they won't even really be in contention for an at-large, which will kind of limit a little bit in the Big Ten. You know, they're going to get, you know, some teams in this year, and as they should. But a team like that, that really didn't schedule well in the non-conference, and you don't have a lot of RPI climbing opportunities in the Big Ten. I mean, you finish basically 8.5 games above 500, 31-22 in one of the weaker conferences, and you've got six quad four losses, and you have one quad one win. They were 0-6-1 entering the tournament. They picked up one in the tournament, but have lost since then. So, not great. And kind of looking ahead here, too. You know, Kentucky is one of those teams, too. I think they're an interesting case. Now, one of the things that, to me, jumps out about Kentucky, and, of course, I think they would be, we're going to get 12 teams in. They could be number 13. You can make a case for or against Kentucky. And I think these bid stealers, like Tulane, knocking Texas San Antonio out, because, you know, the Roadrunners are going to get in as an at-large. That makes that a two-bid league. That's not good for Kentucky. Kentucky 13-17, and I've read some people that, and again, I'm not being critical when I say this. I do this for a living. So, 13 wins, you know, you're not going to get in with that. There have been several 13-win SEC teams that have gotten in, and it's because of the metrics. And Nick Mangione has kind of figured out the non-conference thing a little bit, kind of how to make the RPI work for him. Now, they only finished five games above 500, less than 30 wins. That's going to be probably the biggest blemish on the resume. However, they have an SOS of 8. That's important. They have 8 quad one wins and just 1 quad four loss. Finished behind Mississippi State, finished right there with Oklahoma in the end of the standings. But I really felt Kentucky needed to find a way to beat Oklahoma. They did not. And so they're going to sweat this thing out. They could make it. I don't know that they will make it. And that's something to kind of consider too. And you look at teams kind of around them with similar metrics, like Kansas State, a lot of people are saying, well, they're going to be in. They're going to be in. Big 12 is probably going to be underrepresented in the tournament because there have been so many changes. But you know, Kansas State 17-13, an RPI of 38, two spots behind Kentucky, but a similar record, 31-24, they're plus two. However, strength of schedule, well behind Kentucky. And then you begin to kind of look at some of the other metrics here that everybody always kind of keeps up with. No quad four losses, that's big, but only 5 quad one wins. So Kentucky beats them there too. And so you kind of begin to ask yourself, if Kansas State is getting in, would that be a case for Kentucky? Now, again, there's warts on everybody's resume. Kentucky, non-conference SOS of 192, Kansas State, 35. So, again, I can make a case for or against. The Bearcats of Cincinnati, another team that's probably helped themselves a little bit, right around Kentucky. They're ahead of Kentucky in the RPI at 33, 32-24. And then they've got the much better non-conference SOS, and again, no losses against quad four teams. That helps. You could see Cincinnati getting at large. They didn't get one last year, and a lot of people are upset about that. Again, I think Big 12 may get a few more teams in, but I don't think there's going to be a host. And that's the thing you begin to think about with TCU. How much of the political wrangling among conferences is going to matter here? Right? Because you know that the hosts are going to be dominated by the SEC and the ACC, and there are going to be a couple of Big Tens. Does the Big 12 get totally shut out of hosting? Well, TCU, 16 in the RPI, 17 in the SOS, 13 in the non-conference SOS, and they've helped themselves. They're up from 19 to 16 over the course of the Big 12 tournament. And so you kind of begin to ask yourself, you know, Florida came in, people were thinking Florida potentially could be a host. If there is going to be a Big 12 host, it will be TCU. And there's some representation on the committee that I think is a factor in this era too. If I was on the committee, and you think about the Power Four conferences, right? You know, the Big Ten, Big 12, SEC, ACC, wouldn't you want them all represented in your host? I think you probably would. And again, when you think about the 16, right? Alabama's sitting right there at 15. TCU right there at 16. Alabama, Tennessee, both right there ahead of TCU. So I think there is a pathway for them to get there. And the Southern Miss thing is still interesting too, right? Southern Miss, and a lot of Bulldogs feel like, hey, if Ole Miss hosts, and I shared that on the last show, it may be better for us if both Southern Miss and Ole Miss host to give us the opportunity to go to Southern Miss. And I think you guys would be jacked about that. It would be difficult to get tickets, but I think many of you feel like, hey, well, it's a chance for us to go down there and win that regional. I think Ole Miss is definitely going to host. I think Southern Miss may host. Southern Miss, again, 20 in the RPI. They've moved up one spot over the course of the week. We discussed the fact probably not a lot of RPI climbing opportunities. They will get Coastal tomorrow in the championship game. And Coastal's right there at number 9 in the RPI. So that's a great RPI building opportunity for them. Southern Miss has done their job. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. They got 44 wins. You know, SOS 71, but non-conference, and it's not as big a deal for G5 schools, but theirs is 18. 18. So they went out and did the things you're supposed to do. The blemish to me is the 5 quad 4 losses. That's the thing that kept State out last year, but I said, absolutely not. There's no way. However, not all the standards are applied evenly. You expect Power 4 teams to win against quad 4 teams. And in Southern Miss's league, there are a lot of quad 4 teams. So they may get a little grace when it comes to that. Dallas Baptist didn't really help themselves. They're still right there at 19. But you start running this thing down and you think, okay, there won't be anybody outside the top 20 that host. Now, UC Irvine has kind of made a push here late. They're at 21. But I think there's no way you get 4 West Coast hosts. I think it's going to be Oregon. And Oregon dropped with their loss, 6 spots to 18, but you start running this thing down and you look in the top 20, there is some room on the backside of this thing for some teams to get in. And again, I think you remove Florida from it, you know, 15 and 15 in the league, and then you lose your one game in Hoover. I think Florida, it's difficult to make a case for them. And so I think there's a better chance of Southern Miss, assuming they win tomorrow. If they lose tomorrow, it's going to really be tough. That's not to say they won't get it, because they have representation on the committee too. Their AD is on the committee. But Southern Miss right there. And again, you look at them, you know, when you think about momentum, we talked about how momentum is a big factor in all this thing. Is there anybody in the country playing better baseball right now than Southern Miss? I don't know. I don't know if you could make a case against them. Now, granted, they're playing their contemporaries, but they're winning these games. 2-1 win over Troy, and you got to wonder if that's not going to knock Troy out as an at-large. They're at 46 in the RPI right now, right there with Notre Dame. We mentioned the West Coast or the Western teams just moments ago. Creighton wins the Big East tournament. Well, they're actually in Nebraska, right? And so they have the opportunity to be a team that ends up filling one of those West Coast brackets. They won't be a one seed by any stretch of the imagination. But that's another Eastern conference that has a Western winner. And that's how crazy these conferences have become. Everybody's not just geographically limited anymore. So, you know, we got teams from California and the ACC, you know, and you got teams from California in the Big Ten. A lot has changed. I ran the numbers yesterday. Last year, there were 24 NCAA tournament teams west of the Mississippi. And of course, you know, seven of those teams hosted, and only three of those teams won. Two of those, of course, SEC host sites, right? And what's interesting, of the four regionals that were won by Western teams, they were comprised of only Western teams. There were only four teams west of the Mississippi in their regional. In the three regionals that had teams from the East, and that included, Florida, West Virginia, you know, which is weird, they won, it's so interesting to go back and look at all this stuff too, kind of in hindsight, that, the teams that when the Eastern teams had the chance to go west, they won. And so maybe we're one of those. But as it sits here today, I think it's kind of a coin flip. But I do think Ole Miss and Southern Miss hosting helps us, because I think that gives you one more regional in the East that maybe you weren't anticipate from the beginning. And we talked about this. You know, you feel really confident about, you know, the five teams we thought would be top eight. And, of course, LSU really flimsy right now. I think LSU, again, it's probably out of the top eight. They won't like it, but I think that's probably fair. And then we thought, well, will there be seven or eight hosts? Well, you start running this thing down now. We're very confident Vanderbilt, Georgia, Auburn, Texas, Arkansas. Those five teams are top five in the RPI. They're absolutely going to host. And then the next SEC team is Ole Miss. So, yeah, Ole Miss host and then LSU host. I think that gives you seven. I don't think the league will get eight. I don't think Tennessee or Alabama. If there is an eight, I think it is Tennessee. But I don't think they're going to give us eight, which would be 50% of the field. However, when you begin to think about, like, this Georgia Tech team, now they hurt themselves. They've dropped in the RPI a couple spots. But Georgia Tech won the ACC regular season title. And so should that matter over, some play with the RPI late? You know, you think there shouldn't be big jumps or big decreases in the RPI with so many games under your belt, but there are. But Georgia Tech right there at 22 in the RPI, I think they need some teams ahead of them to lose to give them a chance to get in the top 20 there. I think that's probably their best case. But in the event Georgia Tech gets a regional, again, that's another regional in the East. I don't think that's as probable as it was yesterday. I think that's an important aspect of it. Again, what was true yesterday may not be true today. And kind of looking at this Georgia Tech team, you lose to Clemson today in the semifinal. That's a big part of things. That's a team that's ahead of you that's expected to host. And as people have said, Georgia Tech had the easier path to the conference championship this year. So, yes, they were the ACC champion. However, there are some teams ahead of them that have put together some pretty good resumes. That's an important aspect of it, too. I mean, because Clemson and North Carolina are going to be right there and could potentially be top eight national seeds. I mean, again, you can't work the data and you start thinking about this aspect of it. How many SEC teams are truly worthy and how many ACC teams are truly worthy? If I had to call it today, my top eight would be Vanderbilt, Georgia, Texas, Arkansas, Oregon State, Clemson, North Carolina, and Coastal Carolina. Those would be my eight. The one exception, of course, is Auburn, because they finished 17-13 in the league and then lose their one game in Hoover. So I think I would feel comfortable enough with those guys being out. And, of course, LSU drops out. That's an important aspect of it, too. And, again, when you look at this whole scenario with LSU and Ole Miss, and some people are saying, and of course, everybody out here is just reporting on the data. Ole Miss went 16-14. LSU went 19-11. That's an important thing to remember. In the same league that LSU finished ahead of Ole Miss, and by three games. And you can't erase that in a week. And that's what happens this time of year. A lot of people get caught up in – there's recency bias. Because somebody puts together a good week, it does not erase the totality of a season. And we play 30 SEC games for a reason, and we count all those games, and they count equally, and you get to the end of this thing, and you award a conference champion. And then you begin to kind of push some teams to host. So that's how I see it shaking out. But again, I still feel really confident about Oregon State and UCLA being out west. I think Oregon is a team right now that may benefit from geography, but I think they're also a team, too, that when you begin to kind of think about this thing, where you set these things up, what does TCU's recent push in RPI, what does that do to Oregon? And again, there were some people a couple weeks ago kind of forecasting Oregon on the cusp of being a top eight national seed, and now they're on the fringe of the hosting discussion. So they've kind of dropped here in recent days, and that's something to kind of consider too as you move forward. You know, how does this thing work? Does geography trump that? You know, losing to Nebraska, that's not great. That's not great. Nebraska was a team that entered that game just two games over 500. And Oregon was a team with much to play for and got beat. So, again, the hay is pretty much in the barn tonight, with rare exception, as we get into Sunday. But it's so interesting to me, like the Oregon State thing. There's so many people that say, you know, there's no way you can give them a top eight national seed because they don't have a benefit of a conference. I think that really makes what they've done even more impressive. They did not have a conference with which to build RPI wins. But yet here they are with the number six RPI. They won 41 games. Strength of schedule of 42. Non-conference RPI is four. Well, it should be because everything is non-conference, right? Zero quad four losses, only one in the quad three. And what's interesting, you take, they have 11 quad one wins, which is the same amount as Georgia. They have the identical quad one record as Georgia. They have a better record than Georgia in quad two. And, of course, they had to play a lot of quad four teams. But Georgia played 12. And so, to me, I think you have to give it to Oregon State. I think you have to. And I think it sets a good precedent that rather than make an excuse for themselves, they said, you know what, hey, we're going to go out of here. We'll go on the road. We're going to play some of these West Coast teams that do a great job. In the G5, and they have. And so I think that's one of those things you have to kind of consider. And so I can't tell you where we're headed. I'm just telling you we're in. And I tell you, I think, again, it would benefit us if Kentucky makes it, because I think that gives, you know, a Kentucky team that will probably one of, if not the last teams included, will just kind of fit in where you get in. But after running the numbers yesterday and looking at UC Irvine, looking at Cal Poly, and I know Cal Poly is a team that some people kind of had on the bubble, but they're up to 37 in the RPI now. And so that's something to kind of consider too. You know, the more of those West Coast teams, or really Western teams across, you know, the Mississippi, the better it is for Mississippi State. And a good win today over Hawaii to kind of help them kind of stay in the mix. So what we're about to talk about has been dated just a little bit because it's based on yesterday's results. Let's take a look at the D1 baseball, projections. You know, that's, again, they'll update again tonight. And I think it gives you, and again, those guys do a good job, but it's based on their opinions, and I'm not in any way being critical of them. Those guys are my friends. But I think it's important to kind of understand that they're doing the best they can. They get out and watch a lot of games. And let me just double check, make sure we've got the make sure we have the best and most recent one of these. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. All right. So they currently have the SEC getting 13 teams in. So that means they expect Kentucky to get in. They have 10 from the ACC and then 8 from the Big 12. That's a lot of the field, right? And then Big 10 gets 3. Sun Belt gets 3. Big East gets 3. All right. So their last four in are Connecticut, Troy, Xavier, and Virginia. However, Troy loses today. What does that mean? Virginia's lost today. What does that mean? I believe Connecticut and Xavier played head-to-head. The first four out, Notre Dame, Western Kentucky, Southeastern Louisiana, and then UT Rio Grande. Well, Western Kentucky won today, so that's something to watch. They had Texas A&M in the four to watch. Well, Texas A&M season's done. Cal Poly wins over Hawaii. It was also kind of evenly positioned with them. So maybe Cal Poly moves up the first four out, and if they win the tournament, maybe they're in. Austin, Texas, again, they have Texas as the number one seed. I still believe that'll be the case. They have UT San Antonio going there as a two. And again, they got upset in their conference tournament by Tulane. But they're, again, very much in with an at-large. Arizona State, the three, Houston Christian, of course, wins the Summit yesterday. So they're an automatic qualifier. And so geographically, that makes a lot of sense, right? That regional is paired with the Georgia Tech regional. We just talked about that, right? The ACC champion, they have them as the 16. They have Florida going there, Oklahoma State, and Murray State. That could be an entertaining regional. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know a lot of Florida fans would turn out for that thing in Atlanta. Vanderbilt, projected as the number two seed, paired up with the Southern Miss regional at 15. So in the Vandy regional, they have Kansas State going east. I don't know if that happens, to be honest with you. I don't know if that's going to work. It may. And then Louisville as the three, Rider as the four. In the Hattiesburg regional, they have Alabama as the two, Connecticut as the three, Holy Cross, the automatic qualifier, as the four. Southern Miss and Alabama. That could be awfully fun, right? Because you know Southern Miss will throw off in game one against Holy Cross. And in Alabama and Connecticut could be awfully interesting. Let's assume Alabama wins, and you could have Middleton and Riley Quick go in there in game two. I don't think Alabama has enough pitching to get out of loser's bracket in that regional if they get into it. Arkansas listed as the three, with Kansas coming in there as a two seed, and then Creighton, and we do believe Creighton's in now, and then Arkansas Little Rock. And again, all four of those teams west of the Mississippi. That's paired up with Ole Miss as the 14, and they may move up now. They've beaten LSU. They have TCU going in there, and again, that's a Western team coming east with Stetson and then North Dakota State. So they'd have two teams west of the Mississippi coming in. I don't know if it works that way, to be quite honest with you, because, again, I'm told that, you know, the NCAA pays for so much of this travel. They really don't. They like matchups you don't ordinarily see, but they don't want, you know, 36 teams in the air. So that's something to kind of watch too. But if I'm Ole Miss, I love that regional. Other than the fact that Kirk Sarlos, one of the best pitching coaches in America, is going to be there with TCU, and they would be a very solid number two. The four, they have North Carolina with Oklahoma as a two. So again, that's a Western team they have going east, along with Rhode Island and Columbia. I think North Carolina would feel really good about that draw, other than the fact that Kyson Witherspoon will probably be the game two starter for Oklahoma. They'll probably throw maybe Malachi. We'll see. I don't know what they would do in game one. Or maybe throw Crossland. But that's paired up with Tennessee. And they got Tennessee hosting now. Of course, Tennessee got embarrassed today. But again, there's probably enough juice for Tennessee to be considered. But we'll see. They have West Virginia going in there as a two. That could be fun. Miami is a three. And then Miami of Ohio. That could be a very entertaining regional. But it's so tough to beat Tennessee at Lindsey Nelson. They have LSU as the five. I think that's a bit high. I mean, that's my personal opinion. I think that's a bit high. I think LSU's non-conference SOS will have them lower. That's not to say that they don't make it as an eight. But as of today, I don't think they do. I think they end up being 9 or 10. So I'm going to disagree with this projection here. They have Dallas Baptist, Xavier, and Wright State going in there. LSU fans should be happy about that if that's what happens. They have that paired up with Clemson as a 12 and have UCLA coming in. I think UCLA is going to host. That's how I feel today. They have Cincinnati as a 3 and Bryant as the 4. I just don't think UCLA is in a position where they have to go be a 2. And again, what's interesting about the whole UCLA thing is you know, you start running the numbers, and of course they've made some advancements. They're up four spots now to 11 in the RPI with an SOS of 22 and a non-con of 29. And so I think they're a pretty strong Host resume. I think it's pretty safe to say that when you look at that, say, hey, this could be a big thing. They're going to play for the conference championship tomorrow. You know, they beat Iowa today, and I think it removes all possibilities of Iowa. But when you start thinking about the, you know, the Big Ten tournament, you know, and all the things that are going on with the Big Ten tournament, I think projecting UCLA as a two right now might be a little bit off the mark. And the reason that I say that is UCLA is going to play the winner of Penn State, Nebraska. Let's see if we can get a score on that while we're here together. You know, we'll take a look and see here. But let's see what we can find out here. Let's see. Let's scroll together. Yeah, so UCLA beats number three seed Iowa. So UCLA is going to play the winner of the 8-9, Nebraska and Penn State. That game was, you know, set to begin a little bit earlier. Let's see where we are in that. Pull up the live stats here. They won't be live by the time that you hear this. But we need to know. Yeah, so Nebraska up 6-3 in the seventh. And so you start thinking about that aspect of it. If the Big Ten is able to have UCLA as a champion in their tournament, you know, they're certainly not going to lose many, if any, RPI points, and they're right there at 11. I think in the end, especially with Oregon dipping the way they have, I think it gives UCLA the opportunity to host. I still think that's a real possibility. All right, the number six, they have Georgia. With Wake going in there, East Tennessee State, Utah Valley, I think Athens, Georgia would be a dangerous place to be during a regional with that offense going down there. Utah Valley, of course, another Western team they have going east. Maybe there's not enough projected host sites for those automatic qualifiers to remain in the West, but that's paired up with Tallahassee. They have Florida State, Northeastern as the two, Mississippi State as the three, and then Bethune-Cookman. I like this pairing if we get it, and I think that's a regional we could go in there and win. Auburn listed as the seven, so they have Auburn projected as a top eight. I just don't think it's going to happen for them. Duke is a two, and then Troy is a three, and Long Island. That could be a great regional field at Auburn. They're paired up with Coastal Carolina that has NC State as a two, Kentucky as a three. That pairing could be one of the best pairings of a regional and super regional in the field. I think that's a big part of it. I mean, I absolutely do. I think every bit of that. If you're Auburn, you got to feel like, hey, I've got a pretty good chance to get to Omaha with this. But, man, you look at Kentucky and Coastal and NC State there to get it, that could be a loaded regional. In the final pairing, Oregon as an eight against Arizona and Virginia and Fresno State. That's a loaded regional there in many respects. I don't know, does Virginia remain in the field tomorrow? Paired up with Oregon State as a nine, with UC Irvine, Southern California, and St. Mary's. And so, again, all Western teams in the Corvallis regional and then all but one in the East with Virginia making the trip to Oregon. But, again, with Virginia losing, what does that mean? So this is our last chance to talk about this before we know. And I think there are enough teams in the West that are going to make the tournament that will keep us in the East. Yeah, my concern last week, and I was told there's a good chance that two SEC teams go West, and then Kentucky goes 0-1 in the tournament. I said, well, then that means it's probably us in Oklahoma. I think in the event there are two, I think they'll send Kentucky and Oklahoma. And, of course, I think UCLA, who was projected as a two by D1 Baseball today, may be projected to host tomorrow. So that may change kind of the composition of everything out West. So that's something to watch. We really need Kentucky to make it, I think, to feel great about it. But I do think there are enough Western teams that we're not going to have a lot of teams going back west. That's what I believe today. And so we eagerly await, and of course we'll do our Monday show after the announcements are done and we get all of the information, and we'll have profiles of all teams in the region. We'll get all that stuff knocked out for you. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun tracking all this stuff. I'm ready to get it over with. And the coaching search, all I'm going to tell you about coaching search today is, based on everything that I'm hearing, we will absolutely not make an announcement about hiring a coach until after our team and the coach's team is done playing. Some of the candidates may be done this weekend, right? So it's really about when Mississippi State gets done playing baseball. And I hope that's a long time from now. But it'd be great if we could go ahead and get somebody lined up, get a deal done, and then as soon as the season's over, we go ahead and announce the coach. But out of respect to our current coaches and team, I think that's the right move. And so there's been some chatter out there that something may happen early or middle of the week. I just don't think that's going to be the case based on what I'm hearing. That's not to say that it may not leak out, but I don't think you're going to see an official announcement on either side until Mississippi State's done playing baseball this year. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We've stayed there. It was fabulous. Stay there for New Year's. Had a great time. You can take advantage of that full-service kitchen, the wet bar. I didn't partake. The back porch area, which is fabulous, the fire pit area, 6 bedrooms, 2, soon to be 3 baths. You owe it to yourself, to your family, and or friend group to plan an outing at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You'll be so glad you did. We're not getting any younger, kids. You got to make memories while you can. And you're going to look back one day and say, I'm so glad we did that. You need to be the linchpin in your friend or family group to make the plans. Just go ahead and check availability and start calling everybody and say, hey, we're doing this. You can split the cost. You can pay it all yourself. Completely up to you. But what are memories with family worth, right? Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will come up. You can go check that out. See all the amenities available to you and your guests, and also some booking options, Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save a few bucks, let me help you with that. Book through the Evolve website. We'll give you a promo code BSR10, Beautiful Steve Robertson, the number 10, BSR10, gets you 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show, you're saving some money at the premium place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, you can do your tailgating right then and there. Okay, we've had some football recruiting news past couple days. Longtime Mississippi State commitment Iverson McCoy announced on Twitter, before we had the Twitter outage, that he was decommitting from Mississippi State. He then decided to walk that back, and then now he's officially decommitted for sure. His mom goes public today and says, hey, you know, it's a done deal. And she was, you know, disappointed in some of the backlash. And I am too, to be quite honest with you. You know, these are young people trying to navigate through an adult decision for the first time in their lives. And they don't need all of these comments, you know, from people that maybe aren't so well intended. I know you love Mississippi State, but you shouldn't take these things so personally. Iverson McCoy is a very good player. We wish him the best in his high school career and his recruitment, but doesn't appear he's going to be a Bulldog. And you know what? That's okay. That is okay. He's not going to make or break our class. And so, again, anybody going online criticizing this young man's out of bounds. Now, today, ironically, Mississippi State picks up another safety commitment. And he was expected to be in town and will be in next town, for an official visit. That's Colby Barrett, from Baylor School there in Chattanooga, Tennessee. 6'2", 190-pound safety, has 20 offers. And let's run those down for you real quick here. I think you'll like his tape. But Air Force, Appalachian State, Arkansas State, Cornell, Dartmouth, Georgia Tech, Liberty, Memphis, Middle Tennessee, Purdue, Rice, Tennessee Tech, Tulane, UConn. Looks like the UConn's on there twice, so let your good friend and host delete that. Vanderbilt and Wake Forest also on his list there. And, you know, again, this is a guy that we've identified pretty early on. He's a guy that's taken an unofficial visit to state, had a chance to see the campus. He won't be walking in kind of unaware. Also offers from Western Kentucky and Western Michigan. So mostly G5, but you know, a handful of Power 5 offers there as well. But Mississippi State expected to host about a dozen official visitors next weekend. We'll take the next weekend off from hosting as we have, you know, the 7-on-7, the prospect camps. I hope that I'm covering a super regional somewhere, but we'll have staff here to cover the camp, you know, throughout the weekend. But that's an important aspect of all this stuff is, you know, just as baseball is beginning to wind down, recruiting's about to pick up, and we do expect it to be a very, very busy month for official visitors in the month of June. As you guys saw last June, State picked up a ton of commitments. Most of them ended up signing with State. There were some that got into their senior seasons and maybe didn't progress the way that we wanted to, so we had to make a little room and move on from them. But that's the price of poker in this new recruiting calendar. You know, it used to be you completed your senior season and maybe picked up some offers late. Maybe you played your way into some more SEC-type opportunities. You took your visits in January, early February, and then you announced your decision the first Tuesday in February. However, the way this thing has changed, and that was one of the things that we discussed among ourselves in the recruiting industry years ago, is that the December signing period wasn't going to change much in the way of the pressure of recruiting. There's more pressure to sign early now. How many guys do you see that just wait and do it in February? Very few, right? Very, very few. And you have a lot of young men that what was happening is they didn't allow you to take official visits until the season began. And so if your team was playing for something of significance, you may only have one or two weekends to take official visits. There were some times that Mississippi State players and recruits that, hey, they were playing for a state championship and then in the Mississippi-Alabama All-Star game, so the only visit they got to take was to state or one other school. And so they changed the calendar, so now you can visit in June and then make those decisions. But I think in some ways it negates the benefit of your senior season. Now, of course, things change, right? But we're kind of forcing young men to make decisions earlier. And there are a lot of guys that will commit early to ensure they have something. So it's a reservation more so than a commitment. I don't need any more dissertations about the word commitment. It's a completely different thing, right? It's basically a pledge, right? It's not a true commitment. And it's not like you getting married. I mean, people try to equate that. You know, I'll tell you what, you know, you're committed to taking visits. It's like being married and still dating. It's a completely different dynamic, okay? Let's not tarnish the sanctity of marriage by comparing it to a teenager's recruitment and decision-making process about where they go to college. Completely different dynamic. It's an absurd comparison. But all that understood, Mississippi State's going to be fine. And again, we wish Iverson McCoy the best. He and Jaden Hill are close. And so that's always something you look at, too. You hate that aspect of it. It's somebody that he's close to has reopened his recruitment. But again, make of that what you will. He decommits, and then we pick up a commitment you know, a couple days later, you know, at the same position. And McCoy was expected to be a safety. Now, I do like him. I think he's a good player. But doesn't have a lot cooking as far as Power 5 goes. But he will be a good college player. If you haven't done so, go to DirtyNobleBook.com, and you can get signed copies of The Dude and all of my sports titles there, including the memoir, When the Bottom Falls. I have a lot of people tell me that's my best book, and I appreciate that because it is basically the story of my recovery. And in some respects, I guess it's kind of a love story too. But along the way, I kind of learned to love myself. And I'm a person that loves really hard, right? And so I think that's an important aspect of all this. If you need a comeback story, if you need something to feel good about, that's the book to get. Come float with us over at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. My lovely wife, Dana, runs the show over there, 662-268-7601. Feel free to call her with any questions you may have. You can download the True Rest app and schedule online, or you can just call in and get scheduled. Just drop by. We're happy to schedule you in person. Most days we have some availability, but if you want to bring two or three people with you, it may be a situation where you need to have the appointment in advance. So we've been very, very busy as of late. We want to thank you guys for your support. And as always, come join us over at jeanspage.com. Nobody's going to cover the Bulldogs like we do, and we prove that every single day. So we look forward to having you come join our merry band of maroon misfits over at jeanspage.com, the Mississippi State affiliate for 247 Sports. That's going to do it for today. Next time we talk, we'll be talking about where Mississippi State is headed for the NCAA regionals and who they'll be playing against. We look forward to that. We look forward to another good day of college baseball on Sunday and a very eventful day on Monday. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same-day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.